Welcome back to the Educated Patient Podcast. Today we are here with Dr. Diaz, and we are discussing alcohol's effect on the brain. Dr. Diaz, thank you for joining us today. I'd love for you to just let the listener know who you are, where you're calling from, where you practice, and then we'll jump into the discussion for today.
Thank you for having me. I'm Dr. Enrique Diaz. I'm a psychiatrist at Baptist Health, Miami Neuroscience Institute. I specialize in adult psychiatry, geriatric psychiatry, specifically patients with memory problems. We are doing a great job at Baptist, and we're here to help.
Great. How long have you been practicing at that particular institute? Have you been there for a while? Is this new for you? Or?
Well, I've been in practice for many years, but I recently joined Baptist family. I worked for many years at Jackson Memorial Hospital. So I think I've been at Baptist now for like 4 months.
Great. Well, we're happy to have you today. And I'd love to just jump right into the topic. And we've had a few other docs on here in the past just to talk about alcohol, and more specifically, I think more through the lens of hydration or how people should be aware of navigating that. Today's convo is really interesting for me, though, because I feel like in the last 18 months, there's been a ton of information being pumped out on social media and in the social sphere, right, around alcohol's effect, not just on the brain, but the whole body. So from a high level, can you touch on a few key points that listeners should know out the gate just with regards to the overarching themes or impacts of alcohol on the brain?
Yeah, I think this is a very interesting topic. The latest research is showing that alcohol definitely has an impact on the brain. I think it's well known that alcohol, when it's consumed in large amounts, frequently and for many years, can cause many medical problems. But sometimes we don't talk about the behavioral problems, the effect that alcohol has on the brain. I mean, alcohol is a sedative, and sometimes people drink and they feel less anxious and they sleep better. But again, in the long term, it can really have an effect on the brain. It is well known that alcohol slows communication between brain cells, and it affects some neurotransmitters, specifically the GABA and glutamine receptor of the brain that are implicated on memory processing, behavioral, and communication. So alcohol definitely has an impact on how we feel, how we behave, and it can affect memory, concentration, and learning.
You said a big word in there, neurotransmitter. What is a neurotransmitter? How does that come into play with alcohol?
So a neurotransmitter is a substance that we have in our brain that has a function. So we have many different neurotransmitters in our brain, you know, like dopamine, or norepinephrine, serotonin. Specifically for our topic today, the alcohol has an effect on the GABA receptors in our brain. And glutamate, these two neurotransmitters, substances are very important because they modulate very important functions in our brain, in our behavior, in our mood, feelings, and communication between neurons. So chronic use of alcohol can affect these neurotransmitters to the point that people can have an effect on their brain that impair these functions that are super important.
So it's not just the short-term effect of, let's say, for example, it's 12 o'clock, I have a couple of drinks at lunch, and I feel the impacts for the next 3 to 6 hours. But you're also saying that with prolonged chronic drinking like that, there's also long-term effects on the neurotransmitter. Is that correct?
It is correct. However, once again, the latest studies, the latest research is showing that even small amounts and infrequent amounts of alcohol can have an impact on this process. So it was always well understood that chronic alcohol intake will hurt people, will hurt your brain in many ways. But the point that I'm trying to convey is like even small amounts can have an effect on your memory, and you bring self communication. So it's important to make people aware of this.
What's a small amount? A glass of wine, a shot, one beer?
Well, I believe like the World Organization stipulates like for males, you can have up to 5 drinks per week, if I remember correctly, and for females up to 4. So taking that into consideration, like I would say, and remember, there are many factors here in play, like age, medical conditions, your weight, but I would say between more than 5 drinks per week. That's, and remember, these are like criteria that have been going on for many years. This is changing. But based on that classification, more than 5 drinks per week for a male, 4 drinks for females is considered like high consumptions of alcohol that can have an impact in your body and brain.
So we talked a little bit around like the immediate impacts of drinking, and now there's more and more research coming out to suggest or support the long-term impacts, and we're talking about neurotransmitters, but what are some other long-term effects of regular alcohol use on the brain? Are there more in addition to the neurotransmitters, maybe getting into the structure or other functions?
Absolutely. So I mentioned before that alcohol affects these neurotransmitters, right? These neurotransmitters, once again, are implicated in learning, in consolidating memory. So a well-known effect of chronic alcohol use is they cause memory impairment. And unfortunately, we even see patients with chronic alcohol abuse that suffer from dementia related to alcohol. There is a famous terminology called blackouts. So basically, and this doesn't have to happen with a lot of, with a chronicity, it could be with excessive alcohol intake, even if it is not chronic. So one of the things that alcohol sometimes does in excessive amounts, they can affect the hippocampus, an area in the brain that is implicated on memory consolidation. So patient might feel normal, but they can have gaps of memory after binge drinking. That's the famous terminology, blackouts. So it's another proof how much alcohol can affect different parts of the brain. It's not only the neurotransmitter, but specific anatomic areas of the brain. So chronic excessive alcohol consumption can lead to severe memory problems, difficult with concentration. It can dysregulate your mood. Patients with alcohol problems suffer from anxiety, depression. Another important thing when considering alcohol and the effects on the brain is how much alcohol can affect your sleep. And it's a very interesting topic because, as I said at the beginning, alcohol in a way is a sedative, right? And it helps people to feel calmer and you fall asleep better. So unfortunately, a lot of my patients, they drink in a way of self-treating themselves, right? A lot of my patients suffer from anxiety, they suffer from insomnia, and they use alcohol because they like it socially, but also to treat their symptoms. But unfortunately, and this is true, actually, it helps in that sense. But unfortunately, if the alcohol is used in largest amounts or over time, it affects other parts of the brain that are implicated in the sleep pattern. So it unfortunately affects one of the stages of the sleep cycle. So patients wake up not rested. They wake up many times in the middle of the night. Yes, it's helping you to sleep initially, but long term, it affects your sleep pattern, and then you feel like tired, with poor concentration, you have difficulty and next day at school or work. So that's another example of how much it can affect our brain.
As you're saying that, I feel that firsthand. I mean, if I have one drink, I know my sleep's going to be not good that night. And to your point, it mellows you out and maybe you fall asleep sooner. And maybe it's as I'm getting older as well, it makes my sleep choppier. But I know what I'm in for with even just having one beer or one glass of wine, my sleep is significantly impacted by that. So it's definitely true. How about with aging, right? You mentioned age as one of the variables before, around when I asked you what's a few drinks, and you're like, well, you know, age is a factor, weight, gender. But what about like actual aging of the brain? Does regular alcohol consumption speed up the aging of the brain, right? Like, I'm 36, and if I've been drinking heavily for 5 years, 10 years, is my brain really 46 or 50? What does the science say about that?
Well, in that sense, what science has noticed, doing images of the brain is one of the many things that alcohol does to your brain. There have been some research that has shown that your brain can shrink, anatomically speaking. So you can say that in a way, your brain can age faster for people who are heavy drinkers and chronic drinkers than for people who don't drink. But let's back up a little bit. When it comes to age, it's not only for when you're getting older. There is another time frame in alcohol consumption that is very damaging. It's like for teenagers, for people who are very young. There is a process in the brain called like pruning. That is a period like around the teen years. Your brain, your neurons, the brain cells, of course, are making connections among each other, very important for many brain functions. So that's a time where it's very dangerous for teenagers. And we know that a lot of teenagers engage in social drinking, heavy drinking. This can have a severe impact on teenagers and young people, because it can affect this pruning, these brain connections between neurons, and that can have an impact not only for their learning and memory and concentration, but also it can create dependence, right, on alcohol. That's why alcohol is one of the most common substance. I believe it's the most, I could be wrong about this, but I think it's the most number one substance abuse in the world, right? Alcohol, mainly because it's legal between certain ages. So it's a major healthcare problem. Like, alcohol can cause severe morbidity and mortality by the millions all over the world. So not only it affects you when you're a teenager, but also has a big impact when you're getting older. And it definitely can affect your brain in a way that your brain might look older than for a person that doesn't drink heavily.
I want to switch gears a little bit. From your lens of psychiatry, you talked a little bit around having patients who turn to alcohol when they have symptoms of anxiety, as an example. From practicing, or from your lens, just like with the sleep, do you see it working in the moment and then actually causing on the backside of that, or like on the next day or the days to follow, a compounding effect on the anxiety to wind up being worse because they didn't really solve for the thing? Like, does alcohol add that effect on the anxiety symptom in the days after consumption, or not necessarily?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. So I see that every day in my practice. So alcohol is one of those substances that in the short term has a positive effect. As I said before, it's a sedative, right? It's like taking a medication for anxiety from the benzodiazepine family. They work in similar receptors, the GABA receptor. Yes, it calms you down. I mean, it helps you like fall asleep after, but it definitely affects your brain in such a way that then there is a rebound of the anxiety. There is a rebound on the mood symptoms, specifically depression and on the insomnia, because it's helping you at the beginning, but it's affecting you at the same time. And then what happens sometimes is, unfortunately, some of my patients or the population, they need an increasing amount to accomplish the same effect that we're using at the beginning. So that we call this physical dependence. And you add to that like the psychological dependence on alcohol, because you feel better, you feel relaxed, you feel disinhibited, right? That's why a lot of people think socially you feel more like at ease when talking to other people. it helps in that sense, but it's hurting you in the long term or even in the short term. So I completely agree with your statement.
Is there a safe amount? We've talked a lot around, like, you know, all of the dangers. I want to, like, let's flip it on the other side. Is there a safe amount that I could be consuming?
Well, that's a difficult question. Remember, all these medical opinions, there are many confounding factors around them. Remember, we have to always take in consideration, how old are you? How much do you weigh? Do you have chronic medical conditions? Do you have other psychiatric comorbidities? Do you suffer from chronic? So saying if we say that it's a safe amount, that doesn't really apply, because it's not the same someone who's like 80 years old, that has multiple medical conditions, including malnutrition, suffering from severe psychiatric problem, or someone who's 25 or 30, healthy individual. So but for the purpose of this interview, I think we should be concerned and take in consideration that alcohol, even at a small amount, can have an impact on your brain, a negative impact on your brain.
Well, so the short answer is no.
I guess.
Which is fair. Staying in this little lane here of alternatives, or, you know, like, I don't know what you want to say, the positive side, or like, how can we engage with it safely? Are there, like, what about other options for me if I want to engage in this? Like, are non-alcoholic beverages, like, am I still tiptoeing my way in? Am I still playing around with the physical dependency on having a substance?
That's an amazing question. So if the reason that you are drinking or someone is drinking is to treat themselves for maybe some underlying emotional problems, right? Personal issues, family, work, or some undiagnosed mental illness or insomnia. Is that the reason you're drinking? That's a big deal, because there are many other things that people can do to get better without drinking. So we're not talking about here like someone who, and this is the problem with medicine. Sometimes you have a patient who tells you, oh, I drink 3 drinks a day. I've been doing that for 20 years. I'm completely fine. Yeah, that happens too, because that's a difficulty when we work in psychiatry and medicine. Once again, not everybody's the same. We don't all have the same liver, and liver is the organ that processes alcohol. So there's some people who have specific enzymes that degrade alcohol. Some cultures are more difficult drinking than others in the way of processing alcohol. But again, let's talk about good news. So the good news is there's many things that people can do to get better without drinking. So you don't even need to see a psychiatrist. Like, you need to, people need to eat healthy, have a balanced diet. I call it the mind diet. It's something that has been researched. It's really good for your brain. So exercise is super important. When we exercise 3 to 4 times a week, 35 to 45 minutes, and we do cardio and weights, there is a substance in the brain that gets released that is really good for, that helps with anxiety and depression. Then we teach our patients at Miami Neuroscience Institute about sleep hygiene. Anybody can find that online. Sleep hygiene is a therapy, but it's also something that patients can do on their own. It's just psychoeducation about what to do, what not to do around bedtime to sleep better in terms of exercise. So going back to diet, there are many foods that can affect your mood, can make you more anxious, can cause insomnia. I mean, of course, caffeinated drinks, added sugars. So summarizing, exercise, eating healthy, taking the right supplements, practicing sleep hygiene, and maybe even therapy, like having a counselor or a therapy that can help you. And these symptoms don't get better than you see me, and we help. There is also pharmacological treatment, of course, which is beyond the scope of this interview, but there are many medications that can help. That can help with your symptoms of anxiety, depression, insomnia, that don't cause the same damage or don't cause any damage like alcohol does.
What about, so let's leap off of the all of these alternatives, right? And let's say in the instance, for the last 10 years, everything we're saying, I'm listening and I'm like, dang, that's me. And I'm inspired to make a change, and I make a change, but I'm also unsure if it's too late or how long it's going to take for me to bounce back. Can you just speak to that? Like, if I decide to make a change, how long will it take? And will my brain bounce back, or is it too late?
Yes. So that's actually another good news that I would like to talk about it. So when I went to med school many, many years ago, well, a few years ago, so there was this saying like
Last year, right?
last year, right? When your brain gets damaged, it will never recover. But there have been many studies and that show that the brain is a very resilient organ and has the ability to recover at many different levels, like a structural level, neuronal level, cell, and neurotransmitter. So when people achieve abstinence, the brain has an amazing ability to recover. Once again, it depends on the confounding factor about the chronicity, how long you've been drinking, your age, your medical condition, but even for anybody. So the brain has an amazing ability to recover, and assuming that you stop drinking, and all these problems that we mentioned before can get better, can get much better just by stop drinking. So your memory gets better, your concentration, the connections in the brain start like recovering and connecting themselves. And then you'll be able to sleep better, to manage stress better, and to have better concentration, and specifically for memory and learning new information, the brain can really recover. You can achieve abstinence.
How long am I like? Because everyone
Well,
wants it like tomorrow.
it was a saying that once again, the old knowledge was that, like, you needed like a year. Remember, we're talking about severe alcohol dependence, severe alcohol problems, that it might take the brain like up to a year. I mean, when someone's drinking heavy and they're going to withdraw, that's a full chapter in psychiatry, alcohol withdrawal, many different phases. But they will. It is understood that it was understood that it might take a brain up to a year to recover. We don't think so that anymore. We see when patients stop drinking, they start little by little, like in a matter of weeks or months, recovering many functions they have lost, specifically about their memory, their insomnia, their sleep. I believe patients can get better in a matter of weeks, just by completely stop drinking, or even by reducing the amount of alcohol they drink. Of course, my advice is always going to be to stop drinking completely.
So that leads me to kind of put a bow on everything we've talked about so far and talk to the person that is listening, that's feeling this pull towards considering stopping or abstinence, or maybe even just like dialing down from three drinks a night to three drinks a week. What are some suggestions you have for them to start that process and get going?
Definitely. So once again, this is the message. The brain can recover significantly with sustained abstinence, depending on many factors, of course, age, health. It is not advisable for someone who's been drinking for a long time, many months to years, in an excessive amount to stop cold turkey. You should seek professional advice to avoid alcohol withdrawal. So I had to make a comment on safety. But then you have to, as a person, you have to set realistic goals. You need to seek support. You need to prioritize, once again, sleep and exercise, manage stress, and stay consistent. And then your brain will recover and you feel much better. So my final message, I think, is important that we take this into consideration, and people can really get better just by stop drinking.
Dr. Diaz, I appreciate everything we talked through today. I'd love to just circle back one last time to the work that you're doing at the Miami Neuroscience Institute and just kind of maybe even zoom out of the conversation of alcohol and talk more specifically to all the wonderful work you're doing down there.
Oh, dear. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it having me here and giving me the opportunity to give my opinion on this matter.
Great. And just can you just speak to the work that you guys are doing down there? We spoke a
Oh.
little bit to.
So, Baptist Health System, Miami Neuroscience Institute, we have a dedicated team of professionals that includes neurologists, social workers, psychiatrists, nurse practitioner, nurse navigator. We all work as a team and we really care about our patients. So we have experts on many neurological conditions, you name it, like stroke, Parkinson. From in our psych team, we have Dr. Rohairi. She specializes in adult psychiatry and substance abuse. So you're dealing with alcohol abuse problem, please give us a call, make an appointment. Either Dr. Rohairi or myself are there to help you.
Great. Dr. Diaz, thank you again. And for those of you listening, if you want more information on this topic or other topics, please visit theeducatedpatient.com and stay tuned for more episodes as we round out 2026. Have a great day, everyone.